Salem, Salim, John versus Holder. Mr. Pollack, go
ahead. Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Scott Pollack. I represent the petitioner Salim John. This is an appeal from a decision of the Board of Immigration Appeals and the immigration judge denying Mr. John his requests for political asylum and for relief under the Convention Against Torture. Although we addressed both issues in our briefs, I would like to spend the few minutes that we have together this morning just addressing the CAT claim or the Convention Against Torture argument. The reason that I'd like to do that is that I think it provides the court with the clearest demonstration of the flaws of the immigration judge's reasoning in this case and the failure to really engage the evidence that was presented in support of Mr. Jan's claim that he would be tortured either by or with the consent or acquiescence of public officials in Pakistan if he were to return there. The central event in this case involves Mr. Jan's being summoned in to the headquarters of the Federal Investigation Agency in the latter part of 1998. He was summoned by a federal police officer, and he was while he was there, he was subjected to the sounds of many people being abused and tortured. He was called in. He was threatened by the agent that if he did not take care of certain alleged debts that he owed to certain of his creditors, that he would be put away in a place where no one would ever find him. After that threat was conveyed under very menacing circumstances, he was then let go to deal with the people who claimed that he owed money to them. In support of his claim, there were many documents, reports from the U.S. State Department, Amnesty International, describing the country conditions, in particular the use of the police to get involved in private vendettas or personal vendettas, corruption of the police, and the ability of the police to detain and mistreat prisoners. There was also extensive testimony by an expert witness, Mr. Rizvi, who was recognized by the immigration judge as an expert in the system of abuse and torture in Pakistan. The immigration judge heard that from the expert that there was a high probability that if Mr. Jan is returned to Pakistan, he will be taken into custody and he will be physically abused, tortured, possibly killed. The immigration judge reasoned that because Mr. Jan was allowed to leave the FIA office after his warning or his threat, that the FIA was no longer interested in him, and therefore Mr. Jan did not meet his burden of showing a likelihood that he would be tortured in Pakistan. The problem with the immigration judge's reasoning is that it doesn't really track the evidence that was given by Mr. Rizvi, the expert. Instead, it really distorts what he said. Mr. Rizvi testified that someone who is taken into custody by the FIA for certain reasons, faces a 90% chance of being abused while in custody.
Well, that was completely unsubstantiated, wasn't it?
What was?
That 90%.
That was Mr. Rizvi's opinion. That was based on his experience and understanding of what happened under these kinds of circumstances. It was a percentage that he gave. When we say, is it unsubstantiated, I would say it's very much corroborated by the documentation of the country conditions. The State Department, Amnesty International, those reports are very clear that this happens.
Well, to the extent of 90% of the people
this
in custody in Pakistan, that I would be surprised if the country reports substantiated that.
I think that what he was responding to was the situation that Mr. Jan has, in which he was, in which the police officer was prevailed upon to threaten him with detention and mistreatment. I think he was testifying specifically as to what would be happening to Mr. Jan. The immigration judge, though, took that to mean that if he was released, there was he was within the 10% of people who the government would not be interested in harming. But Mr. Rizvi's testimony was very clear throughout that if Mr. Jan was returned to Pakistan now, there was a very high percentage chance that he would be taken back into custody. I think aside from that, there was substantial evidence that was not addressed by the immigration judge or the Board of Immigration Appeals at all. There were affidavits from a number of people who were either harmed by people over the situation that Mr. Jan found himself in, that were not commented on by the immigration judge. For example, there was an affidavit by a Mr. Siddiqui who talked about an incident that he knew of there where a cloth merchant like Mr. Jan had been killed by creditors in 2004, I believe the affidavit said. The immigration judge did not refer to that affidavit.
What was Mr. Siddiqui's relationship to Mr. Jan?
I think he was an acquaintance and possibly a business acquaintance. There was also a very menacing incident shortly after Mr. Jan was released from the FIA officer's custody. His family, his mother, his brother, and sister-in-law were abducted, held for about an hour, threatened, robbed, and during the course of that incident, the assailants threatened to kill Mr. Jan, to throw his body in a bag, and to put the bag in a garbage can.
There's no evidence to connect those individuals to the government of Pakistan, though.
No, but there is proximity in time with what occurred in the FIA. And I suppose, yes, there are threats in this case that come from private sources.
As actually, most of them do, with the exception of this one incident with the FIA officer?
Well, that is correct, although there is evidence in the form of an affidavit from his cousin, Mr. Rafiq, who says that he was at a social gathering and he overheard people discussing the FIA's continued interest in Mr. Jan. So the record is not devoid of additional connections between the government. Our argument really is that under the facts of this case and the totality of the evidence, that there is a likelihood that Mr. Jan will be mistreated, tortured, with the consent and acquiescence of the government. There's a report in the record from Amnesty International called, I don't have it here, but it's something like No Defense Against Targeted Killings. The country conditions evidence is very clear that persons in Mr. Jan's situation face a high probability that they will be mistreated if they're sent back. We really fear that he will be killed either by private individuals with the consent and acquiescence of the Pakistani government or by the Pakistani government itself. This court's cases would not allow that result, or it certainly would not allow the result on the reasoning given by the immigration judge or the Board of Immigration Appeals. The Board of Immigration Appeals, in fact, said that he had presented no evidence that he would be tortured if returned to Pakistan. I think that's a very clear indication that this case was not handled properly below. If the court...
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Powell.
Thank you.
Mr. Palau.
Good morning. May it please the court, Manuel Palau for the respondent, the Attorney General. The broad issue in this case is whether a delinquent debtor whose creditors have harassed him for payment has shown entitlement or eligibility for relief under the immigration statute or the Convention Against Torture. The answer here is no. The evidence here does not compel the conclusion that the government of Pakistan is likely to persecute Mr. John on account of a protected ground. The evidence here does also not compel the conclusion that the government of Pakistan has any interest in torturing Mr. John for debts that he owes to private third parties. Here, as regard the asylum and withholding claim, Mr. John's burden was to show that he was going to be persecuted by the government of Pakistan on account of a protected ground. The board properly found that the only possible ground was that he was a member of a protected social group, but there were numerous characteristics for such groups that Mr. John failed to demonstrate. In brief, he failed to demonstrate that his proposed group, which consists of delinquent debtors whose creditors recruit corrupt government officials to collect payment of their debts through mistreatment or torture, that definition of a particular social group does not pass muster. There's no social visibility to people who owe obligations in Pakistan. The group is too broadly defined. There's no immutable characteristic there. Owing a debt is not an immutable personal characteristic inherent to an individual, nor is it a shared past experience. And finally, that group is defined by its risk of persecution, which is also impermissible for defining such a group. So the evidence clearly does not support Mr. John's claims for asylum or withholding because there was no showing that he would be persecuted on account of a protected ground. Turning to the torture claim, we must keep in mind that torture is a very specific kind of conduct. It's not a consolation prize if you can't prove your asylum or withholding claim. Torture has been defined as severe, inhumane, brutal conduct. All that was presented here was evidence of harassment by Mr. John's creditors. And turning to the key incident here, there's no apparently it's not disputed that one of Mr. John's creditors paid off a police official to call Mr. John into his office and strong-arm him into paying the debt owed to that individual. The police officer in that case did not torture Mr. John. He displayed a gun. He told him if he didn't pay the debt that was owed, bad things would happen to him. Mr. John said, after 15 minutes, you have to let us go now. The officer said, fine, go. And that was the end. There's no other evidence of any other contact with the FIA or this police officer. And the treatment that he was subjected to on that occasion was not torture. It was harassment, as were the other incidents that he testified to. So in sum, reviewing the evidence of in support of the torture claim, we have past incidents of harassment, and then we have country condition evidence showing that in Pakistan there are corrupt police officers and that these officers do torture certain detainees. But there's no tie-in between the country condition evidence and Mr. John personally, because there's no evidence that the government of Pakistan has any interest in torturing him in order to collect the debt. And there's much that's been made of how the immigration judge misinterpreted the expert's testimony. The expert testified that when someone is called in to the FIA office, someone like Mr. John was called in, there's a 90% chance that person will be detained and tortured. Obviously, he wasn't, and the IJ properly took that, inferred from that, that the FIA had no intention of torturing Mr. John. They let him go with a warning. So that is not evidence of possible future torture. And if all Mr. John is saying here, if all the petitioner is saying is that...
What do you mean they let him go with a warning?
that the FIA officer told him, you better pay this debt off or else.
He hasn't paid it, so why doesn't that constitute a threat?
It's a threat that hasn't been acted. Mr. John did not pay.
He acted on the United States, presumably, so.
Well, he was there for the better part of a year after that threat was made, and he didn't pay off his creditors, and nothing happened to him. In fact, so the evidence of that Mr. John was specifically to be tortured by the government is not there. You can't use evidence of persecution or harassment to prove a torture claim. They're just two different animals. There is some overlap. But what the real omission here, as the agency noted, is that there's a failure to show evidence that Mr. John personally would be tortured by the government. And I would also add that in order to have a Convention Against Torture claim, you must show action by the government. Here, it's clear. The only evidence that was shown by the petitioner here is that when you bribe a police official, he will sometimes there are corrupt police officials who act at the behest of people who pay them off to detain and possibly torture people with whom they have a personal dispute. That's not government action. That's someone acting at the behest of a private individual who's bribed him to take certain action. So a CAT claim requires government action or acquiescence. There's no evidence here that the government of Pakistan in and of itself has any reason or interest in Mr. John or any interest or reason to torture him in the future. So, in short, the lack of government action and the lack of tying any torture evidence to Mr. John specifically are the two factors that dooms his CAT claim.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Pollack. So, Mr. Pollack, your time had expired. We'll give you a minute if you have anything further.
Thank you. This court in the Bin Rashid case criticized when the agency overlooked an unfulfilled future threat. I think you put your finger on that, Judge Posner. There is an unfulfilled future threat in this case. As far as this not being government action or being with the consent or acquiescence of the government, this FIA officer brought him in under a threat. He said, if you do not come in to see me, I will not be responsible for what happens to you or your family. He used government offices. He used his government, presumably government-issued firearm, brandishing it to carry out his threat, to menace Mr. Jan. The evidence is pretty clear that the government does take people in. Counsel conceded that this happens. How that is not government action, that it's personal, doesn't make sense to me, and I don't think that this court's precedents would interpret it as such.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Pollack and Mr. Palau. Next case.